What I'd learned from Michelle was that rich kids didn't spend their Saturdays at an amusement park. They jetted off to Fiji or Rome or hopped on some private yacht with their names on the guest list. A rickety coaster and graffiti-covered trash cans buzzing with yellow jackets weren't on their radar. For the rest of us, though, this was the vacation. Sticky pavement, fried food, and the thrill of cheating death for 3 minutes at a time. Michelle stayed stoic as we wound back and forth beneath the massive white skeleton of track that towered overhead like some giant ribcage. Every few minutes, a train roared past as the wooden beams rattled and the riders screamed. Michelle's eyes followed the cars as they whipped by, her knuckles white on the safety rail. "You've still got time to chicken out," I said, giving her no slack.
"You'd like that, wouldn't you?"
she said, leaning against the railing beside me.
"No, I'm going to ride this death trap just to spite you."
Michelle's spunk never ceased to amaze me. Sometimes it felt like she was from another planet. Her life experiences were a world away from mine, but then she'd toss out some snotty little diss, and I'd swear I'd trained her myself. "If you die," I offered helpfully, "at least you'll go out screaming my name."
"Cursing your name is more like it."
"Same thing. At least you'll be thinking about me at the end." She shifted, fidgeting with the strap of her tank top like she couldn't get comfortable. And before I thought twice, I hooked an arm around her waist and lifted her onto the railing. She gave a little squeal and grabbed my shoulders, legs instinctively wrapping around my waist so she wouldn't topple backward.
"Scott,"
she whispered, half scandalized, half laughing.
"You're going to knock me over."
"I've got you, relax." Michelle's fingers lingered on my shoulders, her nails lightly pressing into my shirt. I looked into her eyes. They were equal parts heat and longing, and for a second the entire line around us disappeared. It was just her, perched in front of me, daring me to close the gap. The distraction worked a little too well. Next thing I knew, we were in the loading bay. Michelle froze the second her toes touched the yellow line. "Look, if you're too scared to go on a big girl ride, then we can bail. I'll take you to the carousel, we'll eat cotton candy, get a stuffed bunny."
"No."
She squared her shoulders, her eyes blazing with something stubborn and scared and completely irresistible. She even checked her pulse to confirm she hadn't flatlined.
"I'm doing it. So shut up."
"Fine," I said, raising my hands. "I'll alert the paramedics." We climbed into the unstable car and the lap bar slammed down over our thighs. I leaned in, lowering my voice.
"You don't have back issues, do you?"
"No, why?"
Michelle asked, squeezing tighter, her breath coming fast.
"No reason."
As if on cue, the coaster lurched forward, snapping our bodies back against the seats. We were hauled up the first impossibly tall hill as the whole structure creaked and groaned around us. The chain dragged us higher and higher. And then, with a gut-dropping lurch, the world tilted, and we plunged. She didn't scream when we dropped, at least not at first. But by the second dive, she'd found her voice and unleashed it at a pitch that set off every dog in the county. I spent the ride laughing my ass off and yelling encouragement she definitely didn't hear. When the cars screeched back into the station and jolted to a stop, she didn't move. Her hair had been blown into a bird's nest of tangles, her mascara was smudged, and her cheeks were a sickly shade of pale. She looked like she'd just staggered out of battle. I braced myself for the meltdown, for the never again speech, for the inevitable reminder that normal people's ideas of fun were apparently medieval torture to her. But then she turned those wild eyes on me, breathless and erect, and whispered,
"Again."